Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to hashtag My Investing Story. It is my great pleasure to have a special guest, one that has come on before, but in the presence of his investment club members, Mr. Bradley Cabot. How are you, Bradley?
Good.
Good. Excellent. So we wanted to kick off, well, at least I want to kick off this meeting. Just a brief description of how you got started with investing, and I want you to tell it because your story is actually similar to one of, I should say, Better Investing's newest board member. He also got started in the same way. So tell us a little bit about how you came to investing, and even more specifically, Better Investing.
So I got started in investing. I dabbled a bit when I was in college and stuff, but I didn't have a whole lot of spare money, right? I ended up taking out a lot of student loans for college. And so, as I was nearing the end of my student loan payments, I realized that I was going to have money and I needed to figure out something to do with that money, right, and make good use of it. And it's my father-in-law is in an investment club and has been for, I think, 25 years or so. And he had talked about it a bit before. And, you know, I asked him a bit more about it and ultimately ended up going to a local model club in the area. And, that's specifically how I came to Better Investing. But it really came of paying off student loans and realizing that I needed to do something smart with my money. When I had student loans, I realized just how important it was to understand money. And, I had a whole bunch of loans at different interest rates and figuring out, oh my gosh, they're making real money off of me, right? And then paying down the higher interest loans first and stuff like that, just kind of emphasized the importance of not just letting money sit and, really putting money to use for you. So, yeah, that's how I came to Better Investing.
And where are you currently located? Is it the Michigan area?
Yeah. I live in a suburb of Detroit.
And you work for, I guess I should say, in what industry do you work in?
So I work in the automotive industry. I work for General Motors, actually.
Okay. So investing really wasn't even in your background at all.
Not really. It's growing up, my parents didn't really talk about investing. I think maybe my grandparents bought me a couple shares of Disney, and I remember the stock certificate hanging on the wall. It was actually a really cool-looking stock certificate. I didn't even know if I've seen a paper stock certificate since I was a kid. They didn't really emphasize investing or anything like that. And my brother, when he was in college, he did a bit of investing and stuff like that, but it was always kind of like weird stuff, penny stocks and stuff like that. And so I did a little bit of that. And then, after I had graduated college, I didn't really, with the bit of money that I was investing instead of using to pay down student loans, I was buying, ETFs and stuff like that just because I thought that was a safer bet, but that was really my experience for coming to Better Investing. It really was not a good experience. I had done some penny stocks too, and one of the companies went bankrupt and all that, stuff like that. It was really.
But see, that's actually why I wanted, why I invited you to be a guest on the show as an individual investor, because I really did want to hear about your investing experience. If you want to share just a little bit before you joined Better Investing.
Yeah. It was not a lot of good stuff. It was a lot of anxiety-inducing kind of things. I would be hearing tips on a stock from a friend, or I do a little bit of research, and you know, it never felt good, right? And I remember just so much anxiety because I'd be watching the stocks that I bought, and you know, they'd be going up and down and down some more, and I really had no sense of what was going on with them. It just felt like really bad, right? It never really got me anywhere, you know. So I just generally didn't have a good experience with it. And that's why, you know, when I started doing ETFs, it was just like a hopefully less anxiety-inducing thing. But even then, picking from hundreds of ETFs out there, and then there's fees on them and all this other stuff, and you really don't know what you're buying either. So, it really was not good.
And about how long, I mean, was it 2 years, 3 years? How long were you actually, in a sense, finding your way? Because I think that when people start investing, and they had not yet heard about better investing, they start that way. They start with, you know, knowing that they should do it, or hearing that, you know, there are friends or friends of friends that have made money in it, and they want to get in it, and they want to get started. And so the best way to get started is just, you know, doing what you hear about, and you know, learning through trial and error. So, you know, just kind of, because I don't want to skate over it. You know, I think that a lot of people hearing this later will have a similar journey. And I want you, because I think you're the best one to really paint the best contrast picture description of, you know, life, investing without better investing, and then, you know, once you joined it. And then we'll also talk about how you, you know, came into your investment club and other things. But I do right now just want to stay in the how long were you in it? You know, what did you do? How did you do research? How were you thinking? Because I think that a lot of investors that are not in better investing are just all about the price.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, let's see, it was probably 6 years after I had finished college, before I even started thinking about taking a better approach, and closer to seven before I actually found the club. And during that time, you know, it's pretty much any available money was going to student loans, but I was withholding a bit for, you know, investing in my personal portfolio. I was putting into my 401k. It's the whole time I was putting in 10% on that. GM actually does a generous match. But even then, in my 401k, I was largely counting on, there was a guy on my team, a technical expert, you know, really great engineer, and he did, he still does, and it's actually pretty nice. But he does this whole analysis of all the mutual funds that, GM has available, and it's all posted online, and, you know, he does a very nice analysis of this, and so I was kind of following his lead on this. And so, you know, when I was trying to figure out ETFs to buy, sometimes I'd try to figure out what ETF kind of closely reflects the mutual fund that, you know, my buddy is telling me about, or, you know, that kind of thing, or just be based on, you know, looking at past performance and assuming that would be a good indicator of future performance and stuff like that. And so, it was a hodgepodge, really. You know, it wasn't necessarily a super coherent strategy, and certainly it wasn't based on really understanding a lot of what was going on. I was actually looking back at some of the ETFs I was invested in, you know, earlier today. I was looking back just knowing, you know, we're going to talk about this, and, you know, some of the stuff I was investing in, looking at it now, I'm like, why on earth was I, you know, buying a Indian stock ETF back in, you know, like 2015 or something like that? Like what drove me to that, you know? But it's largely just looking at, oh, you know, international stocks are doing well. Maybe I should buy an international ETF, right? It was that kind of just guesswork, right?
And so when you started at General Motors, was that the job that you started at after college?
Yeah.
How did you know that you should be investing in your 401k?
So That's a good question. My mom taught, and so I know she had a pension. And I don't know what had me thinking of 401k. It might have just been knowing that they did good matching and stuff. But I went to a graduate school, and even when I was in graduate school, if I had the option between contributing to like a state pension fund or contributing to a 403b, and I ended up picking the 403b, knowing that I'm not going to stay in, you know, academia. I'm not going to, you know, build a real pension here. And so I'd rather get a start, and I know I can roll my money from my 403b into my 401k later. And, you know, the matching was not particularly great there. But, you know, I ended up doing that just knowing I could roll the money over. And so I don't know what it was that really drove me to, know that I should be putting in my 401k at the expense of paying off my student loans, right? But I was pretty adamant on making sure I was putting 10% in, you know, just because I knew that money would be there long after my loans were paid off. And, you know, the loans are kind of a short-term pain that you got to get through, but you don't want to sacrifice too much long-term for that.
Sounds a little bit like unconscious self-preservation.
Yeah, maybe. Student loans were, yeah. I mean, the student loans were an interesting thing. I don't think when I took them out, I really understood what I was. I don't think I understood the value of money at that point, right? Because I went to a small private engineering college that is very closely affiliated with the automotive industry. And I ended up with over 100,000 in student loans by the time they accrued interest while I was in grad school and stuff like that. It was a lot, right? And so, a lot of those loans too, I was in college during the whole 2008, market drop. And so my freshman and sophomore year loans were actually at close to reasonable rates. And I say that being around 6%, but then, you know, my private student loans, because, there was state loans that were subsidized and stuff, that all dried up in 2008. So for me to actually finish undergrad, I was relying on private student loans, and the interest rates were 10, 11%. They were bad. I knew that even with rates that bad, I mean, it's 11%, right? even with rates that bad, I knew it was still best to be putting into a 401k to at least a certain extent, right? And the student loans, actually, I really think are part of what taught me to think longer term about money, right? Because having different loans at different rates and stuff like that, and realizing that there's a lot of value in figuring out how to be strategic and what loans I paid off. And, you know, eventually I was able to consolidate student loans and how I consolidate them and what the rates are going to be. And it's, you know, the same idea of, you know, the compounding interest on these things and how much is actually going to principal. You know, when you start talking about investing, you're just kind of flipping the script and hoping that you can compound in your favor instead of compounding just to, you know, pay off your debt. So I do think, the idea of my student loans taught me a lot about thinking longer term when it comes to investing and really a lot of other things in life, because, you know, the student loans were really not good. It put me in a better spot once I finally got out from underneath them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you talked about interest, and I actually want to ask you, you know, how would you define interest? Because I think, even with you going matriculating through school, undergrad and grad school, it sounds like you started to have a perspective on interest. And that to me is one of the fundamental building blocks of understanding money.
Yeah.
Because interest is really the cost of money. Either you borrowing someone else's or you lending yours to corporations.
Yeah.
So talk to us just a little bit. Explain interest in your own words, and, you know, I guess your light bulb moment about realizing, like, man, I need to turn this around.
Jeez. So, yeah, interest. And like you said, it is the cost of money there. And I think for me, a large part of it, of realizing how expensive that money was to borrow was, you know, looking at some of those higher interest loans and, you know, I'd make a payment. And I would, you know, if you're making that minimum payment, realizing how little of that is actually going towards the principal and how much of that is just paying off that month's interest, right? And seeing that on some of those, you know, 10 and 11% loans was bizarre, right? And I realized, man, I'm sending them a check for, you know, $1,000 or something like that. And, you know, that not even half of that probably or half of that was actually going to my debt, right?
Making a dent at all.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, they're just lying in their pockets, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, to me, I think that was the point where I really realized how much money that was that I owed and, like, what the interest rates really do, right? Because at the point where you're just trying to get through school, I don't think you realize, right? You'll sign what you got to finish your degree, right? So, yeah. But, yeah, interest, I think my relationship with interest and the idea of compounding has changed a lot now that I'm sort of on the other side of the equation, right? Because I look at this, you know, previously interest rates were like, oh, man, how bad is this going to hurt to, like, borrow this money? Where now I think of it more with, like, dividends and compounding returns and stuff like that. And so it's a really interesting thing I haven't thought about is the fact that, you know, what interest means to me has really not just interest, but the idea of compounding value, right, has flipped definitely from paying off loans and also I think from, you know, getting a better education through them.
Excellent. So for about, have you paid off all of your student loans yet? Or are you still in the process?
So I have. It's very fortunate. It's my wife and I, I'd say both are not big spenders generally. And so it was actually kind of an interesting thing. So I came into our marriage. Engineering jobs do pay pretty well, and I'm very fortunate there. I came in with like a nice salary and stuff, but just a boatload of student debt. And my wife was very fortunate. Some family members had set aside college savings, and she saved every penny she ever made and stuff. And so, you know, when we got married, she actually had like a chunk of savings. And there was a brief moment of debate where, like, man, it would make sense to actually take my wife's money to pay off my student debt. And it was like, it was actually a really interesting thing, the idea of like, okay, like, if you really wanted to be effective in terms of paying down this expensive debt, like there is money available. We didn't end up doing that, but just very fortunate in the sense that my wife and the added income of the two of us together allowed us to pay down my loans together pretty quickly after that. So yeah, my loans are paid off. We actually, I would encourage anyone who has student loans, when you finally pay those off, have a student loan payoff party, take like 1 month's student loan payment and just throw a bash for you and your friends. We ended up doing that. It was awesome.
Yeah, that is something to be celebrated.
It is. It really is.
Yeah, it is. And so that takes you, what, to about 30 or 30, early 30s when you probably when you join Better Investing, right?
Yeah, so it's when I realized that the loans were going to be gone soon and we were putting anything we could into paying down loans, I realized, like, man, this is, we're not going to be in like massive loan debt, right? And we need to do something else with our money, right? And even when we got married and my wife had savings, I was thinking about that a bit, right? I am the one who manages our finances. And so that was another interesting thing in getting married is, yeah, it's all of a sudden I was sort of responsible for managing the money my wife brought into our marriage, right? And so I was thinking about it a bit already and then realizing, like, wow, we're going to have like positive cash flow here. And so I need to be better suited to handle it because my experiences were just really not great. I wasn't seeing returns. I really did not feel good about being in the market.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last part. You didn't feel good about what?
Being in the stock market, right, and investing at that point.
Okay. So what changed that? Was it the conversation you had with your father-in-law? Was it?
Yeah, I know that he had been in a club, and I'll probably get this wrong. I think it was like 25 years, something like that. He was with coworkers, I think it was originally, and there's a handful of them left. I know he had been in a club, and I hadn't really asked him a whole lot about it, but I started to get curious. I know we talked about it at some point, and I think he pointed me to, you know, model clubs. And, I have a close friend who is also in the club. His name is Michael. And, we started at GM 6 months apart and sat next to each other. And so, you know, this whole time we've been close. Michael and I were talking, and I said, hey, you know, it's my father-in-law is in this investment club. You know, this is something that Michael and I would talk about fairly often. Is something that, I said, hey, you know, there's this model club a half hour away. It's in the basement of a real estate office, and they meet on Saturday mornings. I mean, you got to meet somewhere, right? And so I asked if he would come along with me to, this weird spot a half hour away in the basement for this meeting. And, sure enough, it was the B.I. Brighton Model Club.
Okay. I was going to ask the name, B.I. Brighton.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, B.I. Brighton Model Club. We had a really good time. It was a very interesting meeting. They were running through some analysis that they had done, and I distinctly remember there was one older gentleman who prepared a presentation talking about stuff that they passed on buying in the last 2 or 3 years and where those stocks were at this point. And his point was we should be a little more aggressive. We should be a little, stuff. Because, if we would have bought this, they're up by, 50% in, 2 years. And it was just a very interesting, it was a heated kind of discussion. But at the same time, I'm like, no, this is really interesting. It's good to understand, why you made the choices you did and what happened after that. And I'm like, wow, this is actually really cool, right? It was at that model club meeting that there's a very nice woman, Lynn Silvestri, who came up and said, oh, hey, it's I heard you say you guys are from, closer to the city of Detroit, right? This is kind of like, probably an hour from downtown Detroit kind of thing. We live out in the suburbs, and so she was like, oh, my club actually meets, it turned out to be like 3 minutes from my house, right? So she said, hey, would you want to come? It's a ladies investing club that, we welcome guys now to. And so that's ultimately how I got connected to my club was, really exciting.
So I want to hear a little bit more about your feelings sitting in that first model club. Was it hope? Was it insufficiency? A lot of times visitors and guests don't say much, but I'm always interested to hear the visiting perspective or the new BI member perspective or even just the new investor perspective, because a lot of things are going on in here, in the head and in the heart. And it's usually just an observation thing that they have. So kind of just, talk about, the feeling part of, and I really like the man that you brought up. Because I want other people to be able to relate and also realize the importance that courage has on saying something, because it's only when you speak up and ask a question or something that somebody can help you.
Yeah. The biggest feeling I remember was when that guy was up there thinking like, oh, damn, like he's really serious about this. really passionate, right?
Right.
But you know, at the same time, it's so I'm a fairly analytical person, right? It kind of comes with the territory. And so I enjoyed the like logical approach and the kind of grounded approach to investing. And it felt, I think, good to see that people were making sort of informed decisions and seeing that there was a way of going about this, right? And not that I had any clue exactly what they were really doing, but it was seeing people have like open discussions about this kind of stuff too, because, you know, talking about investing is something that I, you know, aside from like my close friend, right? I didn't talk all that much about investing with other people, and you know, it wasn't something I you know, talked about a whole lot. And so, yeah, to see like a group that was having sort of these detailed and sort of technical discussions about it, like to me was a really cool thing. It felt, you know, it was really nice to see and almost like a little empowering to see, you know, just people talking about this kind of stuff with some experience and some knowledge and, you know, some confidence in it, right? So, yeah, that's kind of what I remember from.
Okay, thank you for that. You know, I think that, you know, depending on how you are as a learner, and I'm, you know, just this is a general statement, a lot of times people that are really smart and really analytical, I think, are prone to be loners. You know, I'm not going to figure this out on my own. Just give me the book. Let me read it. I can do this. You know, with you being an engineer and, of course, visiting the Model Club, what has kept you wanting to be a part of your investment club, Baker's Dozen Investment Club?
Jeez. Yeah, I'm really grateful for my club. I mean, I will say one of the first things I did is I got the book Take Stock and read through that because I, you know, wanted to understand what was going on. And I did before I had access to the Better Investing tools. Based on what was in Take Stock, I actually made a spreadsheet to like make my own crude asset sheet. I know, right? But so I did exactly what you said. Is I went off and I dug deep and tried to understand what the tools were doing and all of that. So yeah, I absolutely did that. But the thing with the club, you know, it's I think a really good example of what I get out of the club. So back in I think it was 2018. All the stuff with the tariffs started, right? And so the stock market took a dive. And, you know, that kind of thing would normally have, like, made me very anxious about stuff. And particularly now that I've been in the club for a year and, you know, I had some stocks in my portfolio instead of, you know, ETFs and stuff, you know, I was nervous and, like, a little anxious and panicky there. And, you know, none of the people in my club who had been doing this for, you know, 30, 40 years now, investing, right, in the club for, you know, 25 years, right, no one was fazed. They said, oh, Brad, this stuff happened, you know, and like, it helped me feel so much better about, you know, investing and stuff like that because, you know, they've experienced this and I could learn through their experiences and it just made me feel so much more calm about this kind of stuff. I think another really big benefit of my club is people come in with all sorts of different ideas. And so there's a few people in our club who I think really challenge the kinds of things that we would invest in, right? And you know, there are people who do a lot of reading of, you know, all sorts of different resources, right, that I wouldn't have the time or wherewithal or wouldn't even think to look into, right? And so I really appreciate that, you know, we have members who are off doing stuff like that and just coming in with really cool things that I would have never thought of investing in, right? And we talk about it and figure out whether there's an opportunity there or not. You know, also, if I see the questions that popped up, I think our club is at 12 members now and maybe soon to be 13. And right now it is four men and the rest women. But yeah. It's changed a bit since what it originally was in terms of the composition there. But It's having other people to do research as well, because if you really want to have a diversified portfolio, right, you should be tracking, I don't know, but
15 to 20 stocks.
Yeah, right. And then you have watch
list. As a club. Yeah, right.
And so between watch list and I think there's no way I could ever do that work on my own, right? I don't want to spend all my free time just like neurotically tracking stocks, right? And so having a club to, you know, feed ideas and bounce ideas off of and, you know, kind of give me some of that confidence has been a really interesting thing. And it's really made investing feel good to me, right? And so it's something that I used to have this, like, really negative, like, you know, sort of chest-clenching feeling. And, you know, I watch the stock market all the time going up and down, and like that's gone, right? Like I feel good about it now. I trust that over time things will average out. I used to worry about trying to like time the market, and that's just horribly anxiety inducing to try to do and doesn't work well, right? And so I'm a big believer in dollar cost averaging and, you know, just being consistent, and it'll average out, it'll work out because it does, and I've seen that, you know. Yeah, like my whole attitude towards it has changed based on what I've learned and also like having the support of other people while investing, right?
Yeah, I was waiting for that keyword, support, because even I have found it just warm, you know, to be able to go to a chapter event, a chapter meeting, a BI educational event, or even visit a model club. I went to Pittsburgh's Let's Talk Stocks last night and was just sitting there, you know, this round robin, and, you know, somebody did a presentation on home care services. I'm like, oh, I hadn't even thought about that industry. And someone else did a really good synopsis of our BI 100 list that comes out in every April of the BI magazine. And yeah, it, you know, there's that adage that says, if you're the smartest in your group, you may need to find another group. But I found that being a member and a part of BI, it's just like, I never really have to leave because everybody else, you know, like, yeah. You know, they've been doing it a long time. They're a lot more experienced and advanced. And I can just attend one thing and just show up as a student again and again and again. And, you know, they're always sharing their email address, their contact information. So, yeah, it really is an environment of both learning and supportive.
Yeah. We all succeed together is what I've all gone through.
Yeah. Now, one of the things, and I know you also mentioned how you've been growing in confidence and comfortability within the stock market, but I want to go back to interest right quick, because I think it's important, especially as people hear, you know, your story, and thank you so much for being transparent about how much student debt you have, because that is really the reality of a lot of us, and especially of our age group. You know, we have gone through the educational system with all of these aspirations, and we just so happen to come through America at a time where, you know, it's just expensive, right? So, but as you learned about and did that whole interest dance from one side to the other, talk about how that mindset or perspective change has informed your thinking about a mortgage, you know, because I feel like when you really understand interest, then you better understand student loan debt, you better understand credit card debt. To me, it should infuse all, you know, all areas of your life where you're borrowing money. So I don't know if you bought a house, but if you could kind of just talk to us about that new perspective that you had when you were approaching buying a home after coming through this, you know, student loan and investment journey.
Yeah. So, ultimately, gosh, I'll even say we've refinanced. We've had this house for maybe 5 years, and I think we've refinanced two or three times because the value of, you know, a lower interest rate, you know, and, you know, interest rates are still quite low right now. And so, yeah, I think that's been a motivator is understanding it's when we're paying that interest, I don't want to say you're throwing the money away because you borrowing that money does have value, right? Like, I'm very happy to have this house, right? But at the same time, yeah, if you can manage to finagle paying less in interest, there's a lot of value in that. And then another learning from that, I think, is too understanding like the long-term aspect of it, because it's not just the rate now. But you know, I was very adamant about having fixed-rate student loans because I didn't want that uncertainty of what are interest rates going to be, you know, as I'm paying these loans off down the line, because I didn't know how long it was going to take me to pay them off. I was very fortunate that I was able to pay off my loans the way that I was, right? I know most people are not able to tackle a debt like that in the way that, you know, my wife and I were able to. But I think even an example of, like, just the consciousness of that is one of my wife's friends bought a house, I want to say 6 or 8 months ago. And they had access to, like, a special loan program for they're a veterinarian. And so there's special physician loans that they have where you get a really nice – it's they're very low money down loans and stuff like that. And it's a very low fixed rate for 10 years. And then they switched to a variable rate, right? And so the rates that they were quoting and stuff like that were pretty good. But then after 10 years, like, who knows what the situation is going to be in? And I, you know, told my wife's friend, I'm like, hey, the interest rates are really good right now. Are you sure you want to be rolling the dice in a decade, right, with what they're going to be? Because you can get a really good fixed rate right now. And so I think that, like, consciousness of the longevity of that kind of thing has been really valuable, too. And she was able to end up getting actually the rate that's, you know, long-term fixed that, you know, ultimately is lower than the rate she would have had fixed for the first 10 years, right, under this, you know, special loan program that they had, right? So, yeah, it's to me, I guess, it has informed a lot of how, you know, I approached a mortgage and stuff like that, and really just being conscious of trying to lock something in long term that will, you know, be a lower, I would say, you know, I feel very good in not paying off my mortgage early, just knowing that I can get a better return in the stock market, you know, long term, right? Because there's that aspect of it as well, where, you know, mortgage rates are so low right now, and, you know, why would I bother paying that off early? When I know I can do better in the stock market, right? And so that's maybe been another learning from that as well. So the question about, the Disney stock, I think it was 3 shares, by the way, that I ended up having. And I actually have not been able to sell them because I need to find the stock certificates that are probably in my closet in the bedroom that I grew up in. So I still do have my 3 shares of Disney. So they're worth something. They are.
Yeah, and you know, I think, and thank you for that response, because I'm just so happy to have you on the show, because you know, you are really sharing the mind of an investor. You know, there is a certain way of life that a better investor has, and that way of life really is stemmed from the sort of consciousness we have about money. I told someone, I think last week, that many of our options are dependent on our knowledge. Mm-hmm. You know, so what you just said about I'm okay on, you know, keeping our mortgage the way it is because I know I can make more in the stock market. That's only because of your knowledge,
yeah.
You know, and that knowledge is breeding confidence allowing you to make better and more informed decisions. And for people that don't have that type of fundamental investment knowledge or are not connected with better investing, that option is not on the table.
Yeah.
You know, so I just wanted to, you know, kind of make that clear, because people have a lot of different situations, financial situations and journeys. But I really like yours because it has spanned the gamut. And so my follow-up question is really about, you know, thank you for taking us through the mortgage scenario. And thank you for sharing, you know, your wisdom and advice to your wife's friend. But now, how do you feel as the man of the house, husband, you know, manager of all household finances and even father? How do you feel now, you know, making these decisions and making these plans? Because I do want to hear about what type of goals or family financial vision that you have, just so that, you know, we can understand where you've been and then how you see, you know, how you see your future spanning out financially in terms of your family.
It's been interesting transitioning from like all extra money going to debt to like having a surplus of money available each month. And I still think I'm coming to terms with the fact that, like, knowing that we're fortunate and comfortable and we'll be okay, right? Because when you don't see that, like, path forward of or when you have trouble looking forward and understanding, like, what money is, right? So at the point where I had student loans and I didn't understand investing and I didn't have confidence, how could I have seen a path forward to, like, feeling comfortable financially and knowing what money we had and where to put that money, right? And now I feel like I can look forward and know that I have adequate investing skills, that the money will be there to retire when we need it to retire, and that I can make sure the money is there for when our kid goes to college, right? You know, it's we're due with our first kid in 6 weeks, right? And so I'm already like, okay, I know I can figure out college and make that work, right? And thinking back to, like, when I didn't know what I was doing in the market and I was not comfortable and all of that, like, I couldn't fathom, like, understanding that we'll be okay when it comes to retirement and might even be fortunate enough that, like, retiring early or something like that, right? Or changing careers at some point to something that might pay less but pay off in other ways, right? And so there's options that I think are there that weren't really there before, because I understand, like, the comfort that I have. And I know there's something, like, very privileged in, like, having money to invest to the extent that we do, right? And so I'm aware of that. But it's also something that I don't think I would feel as aware of or as confident about if I lacked confidence in my investing skills, right? If I didn't know that the money would be there in the future, then I would feel less comfortable with the amount of money I had now, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that, you raise a good point and you hit the nail on the head, because if you didn't have the investing knowledge to feel as comfortable as you do now, I think you just would have been a great saver. But we all know that you can't save your way to certain things, you know, and that added layer of confidence in investing, and even probably more importantly, the connection to an organization or your investment club, to even if you don't have the answers, you know that you're a part of a community that can get you the answers.
Yeah.
I think that adds to the comfortability and the confidence. And finally being able to say, you know what, I'm okay. Like, right now at this age with what I have, I know I'm on the right path for paying all of my child's college expenses, or, you know, possibly retiring early, or just at least living comfortably and not waiting until that Social Security pot at the end of the rainbow. And I've talked to some retirees to realize that, that, I mean, it's not even half of your salary.
Yeah. It's, you know, another thing is we have started giving more, which is good. It's so my wife works in a nonprofit in development, right, fundraising. And so that's always been kind of an interesting thing, is just the contrast between working for a very large company and her working for a small nonprofit. It's been nice to be able to actually give more confidently, right? Because it's hard to know, like, what's a comfortable amount to give, I guess, right? That's been something we've been, thinking a lot more about lately as well, and stuff like that. And I think we give in ways that we wouldn't have done if we didn't have, like, comfort there, right? I think an interesting example, it's by some, like, odd fluke, the stimulus checks, right? Like, when we got our stimulus checks, I'm like, no, there's other people that really need this money more than we do, right? And we've been donating our stimulus checks, like, which, I mean, to me, like, ultimately, the money is better elsewhere, right? And those are the kinds of decisions that I don't think I would have had the confidence to make, previously. And I know it's a privileged thing that we got checks that we didn't need like that, right? But it's good to be able to.
But we do, when you have certain knowledge and information, you do end up living a more privileged life just by the basis of what the knowledge and information exposes you to.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's anything to feel guilty about, but I do think that it is beautiful to actually that you shared it, because to me, what I hear is that you're not waiting until retirement to give to your alma mater or to give to your favorite nonprofit. Yeah. You recognize that you can make do with what you have. You can grow what you have now, but you also can afford to give.
Yeah.
Because how many people do you know that you even went to school with that they can't afford to give, at least even in their mind, even if they have the money.
In their minds, yeah.
Yeah, they can't afford to give.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know I was going to get all of this from you today.
Yeah. So there was something else that as we're talking about, I should have brought up before when we were talking about the club and what you get out of being in a club. And so one of the things that I've been fortunate enough is I served as our club's vice president for 2 years, right? So responsible for education. And I've been our club president for probably a year and a half now. And that's something that I guess I often end up being like that guy who ends up speaking, like if I'm in like a project, right? Or I'll always be the guy who ends up giving the presentation, right? I feel like I kind of fell into it with our club. But one of the things that I didn't really anticipate was like the personal development opportunity that I would get participating in the club, because it's not just an investment thing, right? It's an opportunity to I'd love to be a manager at work someday, right? And it's a great opportunity to learn and practice those skills, right? It's an LLC, right? Leading that team, right, that we have, and, working with different personalities on the team and people's levels of participation and stuff, and trying to keep the club moving forward. That's been like a really interesting experience, and I've really enjoyed like that, and trying to get the club to do more studies and have a robust watch list and some things that we know the club should be doing, but sometimes it takes going out of your way to get done, right? But my learnings about how to get people to participate and work together on that stuff, right, That's been a really interesting part of the club that I'm grateful for as well, that I didn't really get an opportunity to touch on. And even beyond that, one of the things that I didn't really appreciate as a member of the club until I was president was the fact that this is an LLC, right? We are a business underneath it all, right? Beyond the fact that we're a club that works together and an educational entity, right? There is actually an underlying operating agreement there, right? And so reading through our operating agreement and updating things that might have been a little out of date, right? Or reflecting the way that we currently operate. And there's been some really interesting learnings there just in terms of how a business gets run and stuff like that. And these are things that I don't think I ever would have been exposed to or had the opportunity to learn in a different context, right? It's not like I worked at a small company where I'd be exposed to any of this kind of stuff, right? But here I am, and my investment club, LLC, I get the opportunity to learn through a lot of that, experience a lot of that I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise.
Yeah, man, you made some really good points because, I mean, it's true. You would have never had that opportunity if you've never worked for a startup or never worked for a family business or never been a real project lead or, like you said, I think being a part of an investment club is not just growing money, it's growing yourself.
Yeah.
And it's one of those unintended benefits.
Yeah. Never thought of that when, trying to build my confidence in investing, I never thought that, I'd be in a position where I'm, learning how to lead groups in a way. If I lead teams at work, but it's a little bit different, leading a team versus having people who are extend accountable to you or, when you're in charge of the club, you're responsible to some extent for the progress of the club, right? And the operations and stuff like that. It's a different thing than, working for someone else.
Very much so. Now, one last question I wanted to ask is when you think about your participation in Baker's Dozen Investment Club, about how many hours a month do you think you spend? Because I do want people to get a sense that, in a sense, we do a lot, but we also have a life.
Yeah.
And, this way, the better investing way of investing is not a all-consuming thing. So if you can, probably quantify just a little bit, 5-10 hours, less, more?
Less than five, I'd say. Yeah, it's so for instance, when we were running through the bylaws, right, I think when we're meeting beyond our regular meeting, right, I think we're meeting once a month for maybe an hour and a half, to read through a chunk of bylaws. And I think we did that for 2 or 3 months. We'd spend an extra hour and a half, outside of the meeting, having a separate meeting on that. And then similarly, if we were going to be doing, an industry study or something like that, and a few of us were getting together, which this is not a monthly thing that I would be participating in that, right? But that might be another, hour and a half. So I think it's a couple of hours outside of meetings that, I spend on investment club activities, right? I think the hardest part is remembering to make the agenda like ahead of the meeting and not just throwing it together last minute.
That's me. I'm working on it. I'm gonna do an agenda tonight for Saturday's meeting.
It's really a low time investment, especially when you consider how much you get out of it too. It's really not a lot of work. Like, club or anything like that, and it's fun too. It's not like it's. When I'm meeting up with people to do a stock study, it's grab a drink and hang out and do the study, right? I'm friends with everyone in the club too, right? Cammy lives close by, and so we've been meeting up for walks periodically.
Shout out to Cammy who's listening.
Sally, I saw, was on the call too. I went for a walk with her and some stuff. So yeah, I probably spend as much time socializing with club members, not doing anything related to the club, as I do, actually doing club activities.
And I think that's important because this is all of our free time, and if you're going to do something outside of work, you want to be with people that you enjoy. So it's actually very refreshing to hear. you know, that you are at least friends with some, if not all, of your club members. So that's nice. That's nice. So I'm going to hand it over to Miss Ann. While she comes on.
Yeah, we have to unmute me.
Okay.
Yes, thank you so very much. So since I have the pleasure of listening to the two of you, and I have a quiz before I give our announcement. So Iona, you can come back on camera because this is for you. And this is for also everyone who's in the chat, whether you're listening live on our social media. And I'd like to ask our audience, what are the two things that Bradley and Iona have in common? Can anybody put it in the chat? Or you can come off mute, actually, because she opened my microphone. So Iona is giving me an opportunity to give announcements. And one of my first announcements is an aha moment that I'm having right now. Anybody want to come off mute and tell me two things that these two, I'll stop right there, I would say people have in common? Okay. Sorry, you're choosing to put it in the chat. For those of you that are listening at home, while we check the chat, and Michelle, if you can help me, let's see. Young investors and self-directed. Thank you, Cammie. A great smile. Thank you, Stephen. Youth enthusiasm, investment knowledge. Thank you, Ann Newman. A wonderful attitude. Okay, all of those are great, but the two things that both of these individuals have in common is their age and the fact that they're both presidents. Ione is the president of our South Florida.
Bradley and I got it right in the chat. He texted me one and I texted him the other.
Dean Yeager, welcome. And Dean said, thank you, Dean. Dean said role models. And that's exactly what I wanted to get to because I do have announcements. I am going to give the announcement, but all of you must know this is my first chance to say something and I want to say this. Bradley and Ione both, and we want all both of you to know that we are so very proud of both of you. Many of us on here are twice your age, at least twice your age. And sitting here listening to you, being BI volunteers, some of us 20, 30, some of us 40 years as BI volunteers, it is so encouraging to know that you are future leaders, you are current leaders for this organization. And Bradley, I was actually waiting for you to mention that one of the benefits of being in your club is family, because you have adopted aunts, uncles, relatives that are not birth relatives that have just taken you in like a son. And Ione, tell the world that you've been involved in our chapter since you were under the age of 10, over 20 plus years. And so everybody in our chapter has watched you grow, not just watched you grow, but helped you to grow in this community. And I'm really talking to all of our guests who are listening in because this is my setup to encourage everybody, please. Michelle is going to put the link in the chat, but we're having a Better Investing Financial Empowerment Seminar on Saturday, May the 15th, 2021, from 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can click the link in the chat, but you can also go to Eventbrite, and you can register today. Please do not delay. This is an investment in your future, but also an investment in your family, because we will have some special programs and investment education for the youth. We have something for every age group If you are an experienced investor, we're not going to give it away, but we do have some special individuals. I will talk to you about investment trends and a lot of different information that you can use no matter at what spectrum you are as an investor. And then, of course, we have Think. We have our Better Investing National Conference for 2021 that will be held at Western Dallas Park Hotel. And that date is October the 21st, 2021. And so we want to encourage all of you, please go to betterinvesting.org and register for the Bink National Better Investing Convention. All right, Dean Yeager, we want to thank you so very much for all that you're doing to help us as volunteers. And Cammie and Ann Newman and all of our regulars that join us every single week that come on, and those of you that are coming on today to support Bradley, we want to thank all of you. And please join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time as we bring you another episode of Hashtag My Investing Story. Thank you, and back to you, Naomi, to wrap up.
Well, that's all, folks. Remember that from Looney Tunes?
Only a young person. Only a young person.
Thank you, Ms. Ann, for the announcement and for that little trivia quiz, because I almost felt stumped, but then I was like, wait a minute. I was paying attention. So thank you, Bradley. Thank you so much. And again, if you love Bradley's story and want to hear more about his investment club, we did interview the wonderful members of his investment club, many of them lovely ladies, some of them founders. One of them is the past president of Better Investing. But that's the Baker's Dozen, and that can be found on Spotify. Just go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts and look up hashtag My Investing Story, one word, and you'll see most of our past episodes, because sometime last month we hit 52 episodes, a full year. We've been doing this consistently every Wednesday at 7 to be a resource to new investors and especially to new Better Investing members. And we just really, at the bottom of our hearts, want to share the wealth of Better Investors, Better Investing. And as Bob Huell says, friends don't let friends retire broke. We share Better Investing. So with that, Bradley, thank you so much, man. I learned a lot about you in this interview, and I'm so grateful that you were willing to share your whole story, because I think that the ups and the downs are really relatable to everyone in their journey, through student loans to investing, day trading, long-term investing, to understanding the best mortgage to get, to planning for your first child. So thank you so much again, and thank you to everyone that's listening. And please feel free to share the word, invite others to listen to the hashtag My Investing Story podcast, and we will be back here again Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can check me out this Saturday at our Better Investing South Florida Chapter Model Club April meeting. The details for that is on the Better Investing website. Check out our South Florida Chapter page. Thank you. Have a good night.